Andy!
Linda! 30 seconds early.
Yeah.
Ooh. Do I hear birds singing in the background?
I think those are angry horns. Well, yeah. And birds, yeah.
I don't hear any horns, I just hear birds.
I couldn't hear the birds for the angry horns.
The tale of New York City.
Exactly. Yeah, I have this very sketchy intersection right outside of my apartment where the people who live here, this is like Hasidic Williamsburg, so it's like mostly the Hasidic Jewish community, and they kind of like, they have their own, like we've talked about this before with the school buses, like they have their own school system and they have their own ambulances and like police force, so like they make their own rules, and they just like tore down the stop signs at this intersection. And painted over the crosswalk. Like, it's a really busy and dangerous intersection, and it should definitely have all of those traffic things at it, but they were just like, nah, that's inconvenient for us. So they took it all down.
What was inconvenient about it?
Well, when you're driving, like, sometimes you miss the traffic light right after the intersection because you have to stop for the gosh darn pedestrians who are walking. Ugh.
Hmm.
So they wanted it to be...
Something Max Temkin said on a recent podcast, which I think he said he cribbed from somebody else, I can't remember the original source, was that if aliens looked down at modern cities from outer space and they didn't understand humans, they would just naturally assume that the automobiles were the dominant beings on the planet.
Yeah.
Because all of the cities are designed for the cars, so they must be the dominant creature.
Exactly, which is why in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, one of the main characters is an alien who came to Earth and named himself Ford Prefect, because that was like what he thought was the most common person on Earth. Huh. But
I wonder if he cribbed it from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, I've never read that. I feel like I'm supposed to read that.
I think we've talked about this before. I think you should.
We have talked about this before?
Yeah, I think so.
Huh.
I hope we've had this exact same conversation, word for word.
Wouldn't that be eerie?
Hey, let's talk about the weather, Andy.
I don't want to. The weather's bad.
Weather's bad. It's always bad. No matter what it's doing, it's bad.
The outdoors is so nasty right now.
Is it nasty down there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I assume it's gross up there, too. It's like 100 degrees today and 4,000% humidity.
Yeah, but I have this weather app, Dark Sky, that I really like, because what it does is it tells you the truth, but then it validates your feelings. So it says, today it's 95, and then in parentheses, but it feels like 100. So it's like, hey, we get it, okay?
First of all, I appreciate that the app has some emotional intelligence and is validating is validating your feelings instead of just spitting facts at you. It's not mansplaining the temperature to you.
Right.
It's listening. But I assume that's just some factor of the humidity times the temperature, right? Or do you think they just like, add 15 and are like, there you go, that'll make people feel better.
No, they're just looking at your demographic and they're like, this person's had it too easy their whole life, so they're going to feel very wronged right now. That it's not 72 degrees exactly.
Sensitive software.
Feels like 1,000.
Do they do the same thing in the winter? In the winter, does it say like, oh, 40, feels like 40?
Yeah.
It does, huh?
It does. I want to make an app that's just like millennial slang, so it'll be on a scale from like fucking...
From like faded to lit?
That was good. It'll be like fucking literally perfect to like can't, just period.
Just can't. Yeah. It would be a range from a Kermit sipping tea to everything is fine, dog's house on fire picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are some dated meme references right there. That's like, you know, some circa 2012 bullshit.
Well, we're old and we're busy.
Yeah.
We're busy managing the new generation of relevant people.
Yeah, I'm excited for the time when the memes you reference is your main indicator of age.
Yeah, I think we're there.
You know,
I think
like,
that's
Well, I mean, like, still people will be like, oh, you know, this is Grandpa. He was alive for the Great War. I guess no one's alive for the Great War anymore. But you know, I can't wait for it. It's like, oh, here's my great grandmother Linda. She remembers when Keyboard Cat came out.
Yeah.
She was there at Ground Zero when Keyboard Cat was incepted.
Oh my God, I shared an office with the creator of Keyboard Cat.
Really?
Yes. It was when I was working at Code Academy for a brief period, and they shared an office with the people who made Turntable. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh my God, Turntable was this website where you could go and you could dress up as like basically a Memoji or something like that.
Oh, you would like host a concert.
And you would like, yeah, and you'd like DJ for your friends. So it's like having a playlist. But then you could like see a little like cute representation of all of your friends in there dancing to your music. Yeah. Anyways, it was one of those guys.
Yeah, that was cool for like 2 weeks.
Who made Keyboard Cat. I know, and it was so cool, in fact, that they were able to get like all this funding and start a company out of it. And we shared an office with them and everything, but yeah.
Where are they today?
Good question. I really liked them. They were so nice.
It was kind of a cool idea. I mean, it's one of these things where it's like a classic, like, non-problem, like, why do we as society dedicate smart hearts and minds to the problem of, but why can't you just DJ a party for your friends and you're all anthropomorphized as fun animals?
But it's the thing, it's like, it wasn't quite a video game. Because, you know, if it were like Monument Valley, that's a thing that some people made once that did really well. But it's like, it's a game with an objective and goals. And I think that, yeah, this maybe just didn't have... It wasn't quite a game, and it wasn't quite just a funny link to share. It was like, it did require some involvement.
Yeah, I guess I'm being cynical, but like, you know, I think games are great. I think games are like the great art form of our era. And, you know, so, and games are also completely useless to society otherwise. But is like this, is like the DJing for your friends, is that art?
Yeah.
Is that expressive? I mean, it is, I guess, by definition. It just feels so... Feels like so much of a one-liner. Like, how much depth can there be to the creative work you can do in the DJ Raccoon game?
I just got distracted.
Thank you for telling me. I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah. Instead of just being like, I'll just say, hey, I just got distracted. But it's because I just walked by a reflective window, and I, like, didn't notice myself for half a second because I just got new glasses.
Mm.
And but it was one of those like
Tell me about your new glasses.
Is that me? Is that even me?
Now, was it a positive response? You were like, ooh, who's this snack?
I was like, that
who's
girl,
this hot tamale?
Is a pretty cool looking.
She's got big pants that the young people told her to buy.
Yeah.
And she's listening to Pablo Honey on her earbuds. And she's got cool glasses.
I'm wearing the exact pants that you illustrated for our show art. I'm wearing like wide leg, like rust colored pants. And now I have these new wire frame glasses. And I'm walking under a train, so it's gonna get loud.
This is my favorite parts of all of our episodes.
When I just like can't avoid really intense. There it goes. All right. Off into the sunset.
Well, the way FaceTime appears to handle it is, I think when your like overall volume gets much louder, it just like software like turns your volume down. So like when something loud happens, like your whole voice gets quieter, and it basically sounds like you're kind of getting a little bit absorbed into like a white noise monster.
True.
Cool, huh?
I'm about to walk into a brand new park in my neighborhood called Domino Park, and apparently it's supposed to be like the High Line of Brooklyn. Like, it's like the new hot thing that everybody can't shut up about.
What is the deal with it?
I'm about to go walk through it, and for the first time, and I'll tell you.
Give us a live report, live on the scene of the new park. Have you ever read The Death and Life of Great American Cities?
No.
It's one of my favorite books, and it's all about urban planning and how we done screwed everything up for ourselves, basically. But the author, Jane Jacobs, is very critical of parks, which is the thing that, like, I feel like most people's default attitude towards parks is like, parks, good. Green space, good.
Yeah.
And she just makes the case, basically, in
parks that, bad?
Well, no, that almost all parks are, like, poorly thought out, and they're just, there was some extra space that people couldn't build in profitably and kind of, like, jammed a park in the extra space thinking that it would be a guaranteed good. And the reality is that most parks end up in disuse and then become a liability to the neighborhood instead of
asset.
And once you've thought about this and like read her words, you see the world through a different lens, and you're like, oh yeah, these parks are, most parks not good, but this is one of the good ones.
But that's so far it's looking pretty good.
I think
it's like a panoramic. But it is right next to this loud train, so... there's
call it Podcast Park.
Yeah. I'm going to rename this bitch.
Everyone goes here to record their great podcasts.
There's a cool chick skateboarding in that style where she's, like, walking along the longboard. Like, it's a surfboard, you know?
Longboards are very in now. It is the past, like, you know, 4 or 5 years, I feel like.
They really are.
I assume they're just like a better means of actual transportation. Like the stereotypical like short pill shaped board is better for like tricks and stuff. But if you actually want to like commute, you have to get some longer board, which I assume is more stable and I guess like absorbs bumps better? Question mark.
Yeah, I don't know about the bumps, but I think it's just like easier to balance on and it's not as jerky. It's not for like tight turns.
So as you know, I just got done going through our entire back catalog to make notes and edit things so we can start releasing this show, which is very exciting.
Aww, you went down memory lane.
It's true, and I generally don't like to talk about the show on the show. It's normally one of my rules, but I think we'll break that wall for a moment. Because there's a couple of things that I did not follow up with you on, as I should have. The most important thing is your promised impression of either Diane Keaton or Zooey Deschanel, like 2 months ago. How did this turn out? I'm not going to put you on the spot and make you do an impression, but I'm curious to know how that turned out. Were you happy with your work? Who'd you decide?
So I'm glad you asked, because what happened was neither of those impressions happened.
You decided on Christopher Walken.
No, I don't even think... I think that I... Okay, here's what happened. I had to miss that class. And so I missed two classes in a row. So I missed two different assignments in a row. So I could either come back on that third week and do my celebrity impression or this other random thing. And so the other random thing ended up being my favorite one of all, which was the spin class funeral.
Spin class funeral? What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So we could just come up with any character that we wanted. And so I'd been, you know, going to spin class a lot, as you know.
Having morbid thoughts.
And I was just like, how funny would it be if one of these people died? And and at the eulogy, it's like all of those spin class people trying to, like, remember this person. But they're doing it in the same voice that they teach spin class in, because that's all they know about public speaking.
That does sound like a pretty funny premise.
Yeah. I think it killed. It did pretty good.
Yeah, people were excited about it. They got pumped.
Yeah, that was my, like, so it, when I finished the class, I had to, like, perform on stage in front of, like, other people who paid money to come see us.
Well, I was not told about this. I think I specifically said when I was last in New York that whenever you have to do a show, you have to let us know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were a good 12 people in the audience. You could have been
like, well, there could have been 14, so.
But I didn't let you know, because I was very nervous. I get so nervous for those things.
I feel like you're not normally a nervous person. Do you normally not like doing public stuff?
I'm normally fine. Like, that's what I kind of like about comedy, is that it makes me feel like I'm really new at something again, and it gives me all those nervous jitters.
It does seem like kind of the most pressure you can be under.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Not to compare different public speaking things or whatever, but like, hey, go on stage and just go make people laugh. Go ahead, do it. Entertain them in the most like pure, complicated way, which is like making somebody laugh.
It is very difficult, but.
I imagine the audience of other people in the comedy class is kind of a tough crowd. Is that the case when you're doing your bits for other people in the class?
Yes, because in class, everybody is like watching you, but they're also just kind of thinking about their own thing that they're about to have to do. So you're not really getting their full attention. They're not there to be entertained. They're also there to perform. So they're just like, and yeah, they're very smart and critical. So when they're watching you, they're also kind of like already thinking of ways that your thing could be better. And very rarely are they just like sitting and just in awe of the funny, amazing thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
I've read a book on vacation called Planet Funny, which is all about like our culture's obsession with comedy and how everything in the whole world has become some form of comedy these days. Which was a very interesting book. And one of the things that that the author noted in the book was that very often now people that like are big fans of comedy actually almost never really laugh at anything anymore. It's just a lot of like nods and yes, that's funny. I approve of this.
Right.
This meets my definition of funny. And he kind of like suggests that because we live in a world now where like everything is constantly vying to be funny, right? Every single brand on Twitter is trying to be funny. I'm not sure if you've used that conferencing software that has like the funny hold song, because that of course has to be funny. He points out that like every political candidate now is expected to be funny, which is ridiculous. But because we're surrounded by it all the time, that we're just like, we're in this like weird fugue state where we take it all for granted and like nothing can really be as funny as it was to like somebody in the 20s going to like a comedy show for the one funny thing in their entire life. And now we're just surrounded by jokes all the time that, you know, the people that are the biggest fans of comedy just like knowingly nod. Yes, that is a funny one. You did it.
Yeah. And it's so painful to go back and to watch that stuff and to see like old, like Charlie Chaplin videos where it's all just physical humor. Like somebody just kind of like steps on a rake and hits themselves in the face. And that used to pass as like great comedy. People would lose their shit, you know?
Yeah, and slapstick I think is still a thing. I think slapstick can still be
well,
very funny.
Yeah, but like I'm just saying, a lot of comedy doesn't age well.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's something else he talked about. This is a thing I like to think about a lot. I feel like it's interesting when you're making any kind of thing to try and consider. I think it's virtuous to try and think about how you could make it age as well as possible, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's, like, examples of timeless things, but I do think there's, like, some music from the 70s that's, like, good music. It's got, like, an identity. It's got a soul. It's got something to it. And then there's some music from the 70s that is just clearly parroting the style of the 70s and, like, cashing in on some, you know, popular trend or something. And I always like, in the things I make, to try and trend towards the side where it's, like, if you're just kind of true to your own thing and are aware of the context in which the work is going to be perceived, but don't adhere to it completely, then you can like make a more true, complete thing. And I think that's like possible. Like there are old movies that are amazing. There's old music that's amazing. Fine art's a little bit interesting in that I think modernism had kind of an earth-shattering effect on it. And I personally don't find myself drawn to any real pre-modern art so much. But comedy, though, it's like it's so hard to find a thing from 10 years ago that was funny. Nevertheless, 20 years ago, I feel like our communal society-wide sense of humor has evolved. Maybe we're just in the moment where it's evolving very quickly, right? And this already happened for music and movies and fine art and other things a long time ago. But I feel like it just changes so quickly that, you know, things that were acceptable 20 years ago are now completely taboo, and things that were funny because they seemed taboo are now not taboo at all.
Yeah,
you know,
people
like,
are very hard to please.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know. Comedy.
Comedy.
Being funny is hard.
But you're right in that, like, when you start to do comedy, it turns everything into a job. Like, you can't just, like, sit back and watch something without judging the shit out of it, or like even just listening to podcasts that I really like Comedy Bang Bang. It's basically just a bunch of people improvising, and so now when I listen to it, I'm just thinking about the like improvising techniques.
Yeah.
Instead of just being a part of it.
I think there's something too, like the Comedy Bang Bangs and all the other like unscripted comedy shows, which are my favorite things, my favorite comedy things by a wide margin. There's something to that that's like, it's so in the moment that like you don't have the opportunity to like script your way into some cliche, which I think makes it, I don't know. To me, I can't think of the last time I laughed at like a scripted funny thing. Can you? Like, what's the last scripted thing you saw that was like, wow, that is hilarious. I am laughing a lot.
Okay, so I hate to admit it.
Do it.
But.
Confession time.
Okay, oh, now I'm forgetting the name of it. The superhero movie that just came out.
You're asking the wrong person. Avengers.
No! Nope.
Infinity War.
Nope, it's the one with the guy. This is bad. Why can't I remember it?
Minions.
Are you near a computer?
Yeah, I can look it up. I'm the one at home base. I just put my recent superhero movie into the... Here, I'm going to do that and see what comes up. Oh, it's auto-completed.
Yeah.
We got Ant-Man and the Wasp. We got Incredibles 2. We got Deadpool 2. We got Avengers...
Deadpool
2!
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Deadpool 2.
Yes, so
I know nothing about this, so you're starting from square one with me.
I must admit, I am, sorry, just almost walked right into somebody. I got to tell you, it's because I saw somebody I know, and I already ran into her once today, and we ended up walking like 10 blocks together, and that was great and fine, but right now I'm recording something, and I can't do it again. But anyways, I saw it, and it was hilarious. Deadpool 2, like, I'm sitting there, like, crying because I'm laughing so hard.
Huh. I guess it's not really fair because I don't watch a lot of scripted stuff. I guess that's not true. I laughed recently at the latest season of Arrested Development. Have you watched any of that?
No, I haven't. I actually started to go back through this like newest reprieve because I heard that more episodes were coming out, so I wanted to get caught up again.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. Is it good?
Yeah, I mean, something... It's so hard to replicate the, like, amazing chemistry of the first three seasons of that show, but I do really think the spirit of the show is still preserved in seasons 4 and 5, even though some people are critical of them.
That's good.
The same kind of approach, and I think one of the main things is that, like, the attitude of just being experimental with the structure of the show, which, honestly, they were very experimental with the structure of the show back when it was on network TV. You can only push the bar so far on network TV, and then when it came to Netflix, you know, season 4 was notoriously this thing where they, like cut it together so it was, like, completely out of order. Like, each episode told the story of one character. You couldn't really tell what was going on so much because all this seemingly unrelated stuff was happening, and you only got that payoff if you basically, like, binge-watched the show beginning to end and, like, saw all the pieces come together. I think is a great experiment. I think it was like not a huge success, as evidenced by the fact that they've now recut season 4 to be more typical. Like, I think if you go watch it on Netflix now, it's changed since when it first aired, in that it's been like mixed up again, like a more normal quote unquote TV show.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it was. I think it came out with that a couple months ago. They like announced they were going to recut it and like put it back out differently. And I think most people said they liked it more. But, you know, I appreciate that, like, they're still taking chances, even though they could just phone in the same old jokes over and over again and people would still watch it and like it, but they're still experimenting with stuff.
That is definitely a scripted show, though, that just has made me laugh hysterically.
It's so good.
But also, I'm rewatching Fargo with Colin, and that's a show that's not meant to be funny, but that has a lot of moments of, like, dark, dark, dark humor.
I've only seen the movie, never watched the TV show.
Oh, Andy, you just gotta.
I watched so few TV shows, though. Should that be the one TV show I watched this year? In addition to Arrested Development?
Yes.
Okay, bold statement.
I every episode of Fargo is, like, one of the best movies you've ever seen. Like, especially season 1. Oof. So good. Billy Bob Thornton's performance is just insane. He's like one of the best villains I've ever seen.
Okay, that's a strong recommendation.
Yeah, big statements, I know, but I mean it from the heart. Especially because I'm watching it for the second time and just like not getting bored at all. Like, for me to not get distracted while I'm watching something is saying.
Yeah, you just walked into a lady on the street, so we we know you're prone to a shiny thing pulling your attention away.
I really am. Man, okay, Andy, real quick check-in on the park situation.
Yeah, I was going to follow up too, but wanted to give you space.
This is one of the nicest parks I've been to.
What makes it nice?
It's brand new, so that helps. But it's just
all
really
clean and not run down yet.
So it's really long. It's right on the waterfront in Brooklyn. So it's facing Manhattan. So you have this beautiful view of the Manhattan skyline.
All the bridges.
And it's super long. So there's you're not confined to just one little space.
Is this the park that was under construction when I was there in January?
Yeah. Yeah, because
we walked to the waterfront and there was this little walkway, but then there was also just a million construction things around.
So it wasn't that one. I'm further south.
Okay.
That was in Greenpoint, and this is in south Williamsburg. But
okay.
Anyways, there's just volleyball courts and fields and bocce ball, and there's a dog run, and there's this taco place in the middle of it with a patio that you can drink on. But it's also a part of this old Domino sugar factory, so it looks like they've left the factory here, which is huge and decrepit, and it's just towering over all of this new shiny stuff. And they've left a lot of the original elements of the factory here, which I really like. They turned an old crane into a playground. That's pretty awesome.
Wow. I'm look up this place now because I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Yeah, look up Domino Park. And I'm now a little sad that I'm leaving this neighborhood in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to follow up on, because I know that this is the month that you're moving in with Colin officially, which I only know because you mentioned it forever ago.
Yeah, I know we decided forever ago, and we're finally doing it, and we'll finally shut up about it, but...
We haven't talked about it that much. I forgot about it. I mean, I honestly, in my head, I think I just kind of shortcutted it to they moved in together. They live together now. But it hasn't actually happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet, but I mean, we're at that point where we basically live together, we spend every night together, and it's right now we're just in the stages of moving things around, so had to move some of his furniture from his house to his parents this weekend, and then...
Ooh, boom, take that, Colin, Linda's here, she won't have that old end table.
Yeah, it was end tables too, how'd you know?
Get your foosball table stained in beer out of here, there's a lady moving in.
Yeah, right? Girl zone from now on.
I gotta put my big box of tampons here. I need you to move this. I need you to move this blow up doll or whatever.
I sleep on a bed of tampons.
Gives you power.
Yeah, there's lots of kids doing wheelies right now. That looks hard.
I was gonna ask about the. I think one of the things that Jane Jacobs mentions about a park is that a sign of a good park is that it's used by all different types of people across all different walks of life and ages and occupations. Talk to me about the makeup of this crowd. Who are you looking at?
Oh yeah. We are talking every single age, race, nationality, a lot of the Hasidic community are here, but also a lot of bougie gentrifiers and also people who look like they probably, I don't know. It's a really good mix. Young kids, teenagers yelling at each other on their bikes and stuff. I see some intense chest tattoos.
Ooh.
Right now. Yeah. Intimidating. A girl just ran by and she is ripped.
Oh yeah, the ripped people. Yeah. I still feel a little bit self-conscious around the ripped people.
Oh, hey, how's CrossFit, huh?
Oh, it's fine. I'm doing it.
So you're working on becoming a ripped people.
I guess. My body hasn't changed so much in the month I've been doing it, but whatever. Getting healthy, I guess.
Yeah, I've been doing spin classes 5 times a week for the last 8 months or so. And
so you must be ripped now.
I went up a pant size somehow. It's everything in
maybe
my...
Maybe your butt just got bigger.
I think it did. Because I'm using those biking muscles. So I feel I'm in really good shape. And I think that things are just reproportioning, my waist.
Everything's moving around. It's just
Yeah. my waist is a little bit smaller, but then my butt has gone up a whole size.
This is my problem with all pants. I'm all butt. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I have to buy new shorts. Because here's the other thing. Right now I'm living this like really quite embarrassing life where, let's see, every single pair of jeans that I own, which is the only casual pants that I wear. I don't own any khakis at the moment. Every single pair of jeans that I own and three of my five pairs of shorts, of all my shorts, have enormous holes on the right side of my ass. All of
them. Just because your butt's so big.
First of all, it's always the right side. I don't know why. I assume it has something to do with, like, how I bike, maybe. But
wait, so is it, like, in the butt cheek, in the butt crack?
Yeah, it's like the bottom of the cheek is all ripped open.
Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. And I keep looking for shorts that will fit me on the internet, and I can't find any of them. Like, in order for me to have a pair of shorts that will fit my butt and thighs, it needs to be like a 36-inch waist, and I have a 32-inch waist, and I just can't get my butt in these pants. And
oh, man.
I can't bring myself to buy shorts that don't fit quite right because I have that problem. So my current solution is just wear shorts with big old holes in them, like some animal.
That's not a common problem for a white boy.
Yeah, well, so I had a suit made for a friend's wedding last year, and the tailor that was, you know, measuring us, sent the measurements off to have the suit made, was a black guy, and he like measured me, and he goes, "Woo, you have the butt of my people," and I was like, "Thank you."
Yeah, I was just like, "I'm sorry."
But what they ended up doing is ordering pants in the dimensions of 36-inch waist pants and then having the waist taken in because that's what it takes apparently to have pants that fit. And I gotta say, that's the only pair of pants I've ever had that fits right, and it's a good pant. Fits. Good trouser.
No, when I was trying on pants today, I have this problem with high waisted stuff because like for the high waist, you know, I pull them up and if they fit my butt, then they look like the after photo in the waist. Where I can like pull so much of the pants away from me that it's just like inches there.
Could you then, just like tie it into a cute little bun or like wrap a ribbon around it or something?
Yeah, just wrap a scrunchie around it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a good butt update.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear about your butt. I never knew that about your butt. I'm going to have to take a closer look next time.
I got all messed up proportions. I'm not right. It's a problem.
Yeah, you're very tall, aren't you?
I'm like 6'1"-ish, maybe a little more.
Yeah, that's tall.
Not like very tall, a little more than average, I
guess. That's like pretty tall.
I guess, I don't know.
But I think you're also very thin, so you mentioned, it accentuates it.
You mentioned seeing yourself in the reflection and being like, oh, new glasses. I had this experience once where I went to college, I had a couple roommates, and my roommates are like shorter dudes. Like, I think they're probably all like 5'9", 5'10", something like that. And I have this experience once where we walk past, I don't ever remember, it's like we lived together for years, right? But you don't spend a lot of time like staring into a mirror with your roommates. That's not a normal passage of time.
Right.
There's one day we walked past this like mirror finished building and I like caught us walking in our reflection and I was like, holy shit, I'm so much bigger than both of you. Like, how is this even possible? Like, in my head, I just, like, assumed, like, oh, yeah, we're, like, all the same size. And then, no, I'm, like, this big gargantuan monster, and they're, like, normally proportioned people.
That is hilarious.
It's weird the things your brain will let you forget. Like, that one moment in a mirror-finished building. Like, why that moment? Why that?
I have the same problem, but maybe I've told you about this before, but I have the opposite, where I always assume that I'm so much bigger than people.
Oh, interesting. I feel like that's not the normal way to perceive oneself.
And I think it must have to do with the fact that I was always like a giant growing up. I was always like at least a foot taller than everybody in class.
Wait, really?
And so, yeah, like, so everybody was like, and nurses and doctors were always telling me like, oh, you'll probably grow to be 6 feet tall. Like, because I was always just so much bigger than everyone.
So you took that to heart. You ingrained that deep inside.
Yeah, I was like, all right. But then I just stopped growing into eighth grade. So I've been the same size since middle school.
Is that
much.
Not a normal time to stop growing for a young woman? I feel like is that abnormally early?
I feel like it's a little early. Like, I feel like a lot of girls had their growth spurts through to like junior, senior year of high school. And
so,
then you're done.
So in reality, you're like, you know, 5'6" or whatever, but you think you're Six foot?
Yeah. Sorry about this.
Did you hurt somebody? Is that why you're apologizing? Are you the cause of the ambulance?
Yeah, that's how I apologize to somebody who needs rescuing by the ambulance. I'm like, very sorry.
You step over somebody who just like crashed their skateboard or broke their leg or whatever.
It's not my intention. But yeah, so I'll look in a mirror like next to Colin or whoever, and I'm always like, whoa, am I really that small?
Huh. Well, there you go. Opposites, Linda.
Opposites. We're different.
Turns out.
Well, I think I'm going to go eat dinner.
Do it. Enjoy your walk in your cool park and go have some dinner. And then live your best life. I'm going to go to bed.
Go to bed.
I'm the exciting one.
It's 8:30, but all right. You go to bed.
Well, it takes time to go to bed. All right, goodbye, Linda.
Bye, Andy.